WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
While the major figures in the O.J. Simpson trial published their memoirs, another book about a much less celebrated legal case has just won the National Book Critics Circle Award for nonfiction. This book is called A Civil Action. It's about a lawyer named Jan Schlickman who obsessively pursued a case for about a decade and nearly destroyed himself in the process. A perhaps equally obsessive journalist, Jonathan Haar, followed the story over the years, never knowing exactly what kind of book he'd get out of it. The lawyer, Schlickman, took on a class action suit in 1986, representing eight families in Woburn, Massachusetts, who were suing two major corporations, W.R. Grace and Beatrice Foods. I asked writer Jonathan Haar to describe what the lawsuit was about.
Beginning in the late 1960s and throughout the 1970s, the children of East Woburn began getting sick, largely with leukemia. They got sick and they died, and it was a plague of almost biblical dimensions. As it turned out, two wells that supplied water to the eastern part of the town were contaminated with toxic waste, with industrial waste, primarily trichloroethylene, a solvent used by industry. And two companies had plants near the wells that provided East Woburn with water. And those companies had, the case was essentially about whether those companies had dumped waste that had gotten into the wells, and whether that waste had caused the illness in East Woburn. These families wanted some answers, and they weren't getting answers from public authorities. They needed a lawyer, and they found one.
You know, in some ways, this lawyer seemed, at the beginning of the case, to almost embody some of the stereotypes, some of the negative stereotypes so many Americans have of lawyers. Big ego, ostentatious style.
Yes. He was all of that. He was a kind of classic product of 60s idealism and 80s greed and acquisitiveness. When he took on this case, he was in his early 30s. He wore $1,000 suits. He had a Beacon Hill duplex. He drove a Porsche. He told me, what he wanted to do in life was to get rich and famous by doing good. And that's why he took on the case. He thought it would do those things for him.
This case ended up nearly swallowing up Jan Schlickman, who was representing the families that were suing the two companies. How did it swallow him up?
It destroyed him. It really did. He lost his Porsche. He lost his Beacon Hill condo. He was sleeping on a fold-out couch in his office. I was in the next office over, sleeping on a fold-out couch, watching him. The case consumed enormous amounts of money. During the trial, the telephone to the office was cut off at one point. He had to borrow money. He had to walk to work. He could no longer take a cab, and he'd lost his car. He devoted everything to this case. He became obsessed with it. He simply wouldn't let it go. The fascinating thing to me was that this guy, who seemed to care so much about money and so much about the good life, was willing to sacrifice it all in pursuit of what he felt was truth and justice.
Did ego have to do with it, too?
Ego, I think, played a large role. Certainly initially it did, when he believed he could win. Afterwards, when he simply wouldn't give up, it was in his gut, I think.
When he was bankrupt and lost his Porsche and was sleeping on his couch in the office, did he try to keep up appearances in court so people wouldn't know how bad things were going?
It was a big issue with him. The one thing he insisted on having done was getting his suits out of the dry cleaners. He was also very superstitious in a lot of ways. It was kind of funny to watch him. He had certain lucky ties, and he had a lucky suit, and he had to have that suit the morning of the final argument. The dry cleaner wouldn't give it to him because he owed them $180, I think it was. He finally convinced him. He persuaded the dry cleaner to give him a suit, and he won his first argument of the day.
Now, they could have made a whole lot of money on the verdict. What was the verdict?
The verdict was that W.R. Grace was liable for having contaminated the wells, and the jury exonerated Beatrice Foods from responsibility. W.R. Grace settled for $8 million after the verdict, and of that sum, some $400 plus thousand went to the families. The rest went largely to pay case expenses and legal fees. In the end, Schlickman took only, I think it was $30,000 for his 8 years of work on the case and went off to Hawaii on a vacation. But what he didn't realize then, after the verdict, was that he would spend the next 4 years pursuing an appeal against Beatrice Foods. The lawyers for Beatrice Foods had concealed documents and destroyed evidence. And Schlickman spent the next 4 years trying to get that verdict reversed and trying to get a new trial against Beatrice. And that's when he really plummeted. That's when things really began to go badly for him.
Did he succeed?
He succeeded in finding the truth, I think. He didn't get justice. In the end, he went off to Hawaii again, vowing never to practice law. He essentially lived the life of a beach bum for a couple of years, essentially penniless, living in dilapidated motels and camping out on beaches.
This case went on for years between, the pretrial work, the suit, and then the appeals and so on. So it was about 8 years. That's an enormous amount of time for you. Did everything else in your life get put on hold?
Well, this was my life. I actually came into it in 1986, just as the trial was beginning. 4 years before that, leading up to the trial, was the discovery process, which I was not there to see. I reconstructed that through people's memories and through depositions and transcripts, pretrial transcripts. I was there for the following ensuing 4 years. When I first got a contract with Random House, I thought that it would take me about, 3 years to write the book. That was my first contract. I had 5 extensions on the contract in all. And I didn't have enough money either. I ran out of money. But I'd taken Random House's money, and I felt like I had to get the book done. So in all, it took me 8.5 years. I didn't finish until late 94.
Yeah, I think a real problem in writing a nonfiction story that takes 8 years to resolve is you could get so trapped in the detail.
I was for a very long time. I think that I had 50,000 pages of documents of transcripts, depositions, trial testimony, and court filings, in addition to some 100, I think I more than 100 notebooks that I'd filled with things I'd witnessed. I got very lost in it. By 1991, I was hugely depressed, to be honest, until I finally figured out a way to construct the narrative that I thought worked.
What was the depression like for you when you got really depressed about not being able to do the book?
Well, I spent an awful lot of time supine on the couch in my office trying to figure it out. It was really grim. We had difficulty paying bills, and I remember winter time going down and looking at the gas meter as the furnace was on, the meter twirling around and around, and thinking to myself, my God, how are we going to pay for this? I, in fact, applied for a job around here as a night proofreader at a place, and I got rejected. I got a form rejection.
How did you take it?
It looked to me like nothing was ever going to go right. Plus, I saw this thing happening, this kind of... Schlickman spent 8 years on the case. I was spending about 8 years writing it. He hadn't gotten anything out of it, and didn't look like I was going to get anything out of it either in the end.
Well, in fact, the book has, gotten a lot of acclaim. It was on Time Magazine's 10 Best List of 1995, Entertainment Weekly's Book of the Year. And then Robert Redford has bought the screen rights to it, and he, I think, intends on playing the lawyer, Schlickman, who's the main character in the way you've told this story. It strikes me, that's the ultimate happy ending now in America, that Redford or somebody likes him buys the screen rights and stars in the made-for-TV version of your life or your book.
It does. It's a happy ending for me. You write a book, and if you're lucky, a couple of 100,000 people, that's a lot, end up reading it. You do a movie, and if only a couple of million people come to see it, it's a failure. Movies are for better or for worse, the popular culture of America today. And for me, in any event, it was a happy ending. I don't think I could ask for anybody better than Redford to do this. He has a concern about the environment, and the movies he's made have been quite extraordinary to my mind.
One last question. Do you want your next project to be a pretty short project, one where there's like no danger of sinking into quicksand?
I'd like my next project not to take 8 years. I can guarantee you that.
Jonathan Haar, author of the book A Civil Action. We spoke before his book won the National Book Critics Circle Award for Nonfiction.